This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3 102.1.
This is Bob Fitrakis. We're in the studio with Pastor Bob Ward of the First English Lutheran Church, meaning the first to go from German to English, and they're celebrating the 100th year of their church on the east side of Columbus. And your congregation has been around longer. How do you plan to mark this occasion? Many of these churches just don't stay in the inner city. My church in Detroit headed for Livonia as soon as the riots occurred. And those of us who wish to stay in the city, my dad was the bus pastor, ended up, you know, with conflict. It was sort of, let's flee out to nice cornfields in suburbia. It's less difficult, or so the perception is. Why did your church stay?
Yes, I've watched a number of churches leave the central city and go to greener pastures. Quite a few years ago, First English made the conscious decision to stay in the city because we feel called to be there. We feel like that is the place God has called us and called us to do ministry and mission.
And the 100th year of your building, what are you planning? You got events coming up?
The congregation's been around since 1848. It's been on that particular site for 100 years now. The building was built in 1912. And we actually have a pretty cool old picture of the groundbreaking, the congregation gathered around as the building was being built. You can see Main Street as it was in 1912. This Sunday, we're going to have a luncheon at 1 o'clock. We're bringing in a keynote speaker. But we're beginning our celebration of the history of the church, as well as planning for the future. So we're kicking off a fundraising campaign this Sunday to mark the celebration, the anniversary.
Okay, so that's Sunday, October 9th?
Yes,
okay.
October 9th.
All right.
And the time again?
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock, October 9th. And is there a cost donation for the building?
Actually, no, the luncheon is free. Everybody's invited to come and join us.
Yeah, we're familiar with that model of fundraising at the Free Press. Sometimes it works really well. Sometimes you hope to break even.
Yeah. Our goal is $195,000, and that's going to go for both building repair as well as programming costs. Ministry takes money. There's no other way around it. To continue to do the outreach programming, the children's programming, and all the other the great ministries we do, it's going to take some cash to do it.
Great. Do you want to talk more about your involvement in the community and the types of programming you do?
Well, we have been focused on housing, jobs, and public safety for the last 5 years.
Great.
Since I came to the congregation, I've noticed that public safety is out there in front of everybody in our neighborhood. We're at 1015 East Main Street, Main and 22nd, and south of Main has been a challenging area. So we've been forming actually collaborations with a number of groups to bring some partners together and make this a community-wide effort. Over the summer at Main and Champion, we've used the lot there from Columbus Compact. They've been gracious enough to let us use it. And we've been doing block parties there every Friday night, 6 o'clock, all summer, setting up barbecue grills, coming out, barbecuing some hot dogs, putting some side dishes out, something to drink, as well as playing games with the kids. We actually saw a police officer throwing a football with one of the neighborhood kids out there, so I was really impressed with that.
Yeah, the Columbus Compact Corporation is the former home of the Free Press, right?
Okay.
And my law office. And they're moving out of that building, but they're staying in the neighborhood, are they not, the Compact?
My understanding is they're moving almost right across the street. So, okay. Yes, I'm glad that Compact is staying in our neighborhood because they've been one of our anchors there.
So the kids come out, approach to, how does that foster community safety? Just people getting to know each other?
Main and Champion has been a troublesome corner. Mm-hmm. A lot of activities going on out there that I don't think the community necessarily wants to see.
Not all of them perhaps legal.
Right, right. So in order to just bring some positive energy and to encourage to encourage neighbors to come out and be seen and feel like you can come out of your house and that you will be safe and you can join together with other people. And we've been doing the block parties.
Yeah, I think that's great. It seems like, you know, the first step towards safety is just knowing your neighbors and feeling comfortable in your neighborhood. And if you have conflicts with your neighbors, just to be able to talk to them in a constructive way and in a nonviolent way. So mm-hmm. do you like nonviolence programming?
We have been working with Central Community House. Central developed a program over the summer with the young people called Live in Peace.
Great.
That has been encouraging the young people to come up with a message of nonviolent existence with each other. How do we live together and live in peace together?
And it can always start by breaking bread. I remember Cornel West, Barbara Ehrenreich, first thing they did after the riots in Los Angeles was go to an inner city church in Compton and break bread, invite everyone in, and literally eat together and get to know each other. What else is happening at your church?
And I think Lutherans pretty much originated the potluck, so we've got that down pretty good. We do food well.
Okay, you heard it. Because I've been to some bad church potlucks. Some churches a little more austere, independent, but the Lutherans celebrate with food, so that's positive.
Okay, and so block parties, programming for kids, and then tell me about the RIC program.
We are what's called a Reconciling in Christ congregation, RIC.
What does that mean?
Which means that we are open and affirming that we welcome everybody. And when I say we welcome everybody, I mean we really welcome everybody, including the GLBT community.
So, you mean God doesn't pick and choose which sinners get to come into church? I've always been puzzled. I've had discussions with good friends, political allies in various churches. And some of them that aren't affirming aren't gay friendly. And I'm saying, you realize you got some people in your church that are adulterers probably and maybe have committed other sins. Why don't you cast them out?
Yeah, I think when we come to the realization that we are all sinners and that church is for the sinners, then no matter who you are, there's a place there for all of us. Everyone is welcome to the table. Everyone has a place and is accepted.
And other programs for kids? Are you doing other stuff as well with children in the neighborhood?
Well, every Saturday we do something we call Saturday Kids Camp from 10 to 1:30. We have programming for kids. And the first thing we do is feed them breakfast when they walk in the door because we realize that Saturdays you don't necessarily have the free and reduced meal program at school. So every Saturday morning, we start off with breakfast. And then throughout the day, we set up, we have a game room there with the electronics, which I'm not real familiar with, but the Game Boy Xbox stuff. We got a pool table, ping pong table, foosball table, air hockey table. We might go to the park. We've been down to the new water park downtown. We've been to the Columbus Museum. We go a lot of different places.
So it sounds like basically you're just creating like a healthy environment for kids to come and hang out and benefit from some adult supervision and
right.
activities and interaction with other kids.
Right. We have a fairly close ratio of adult to child. So each child gets a lot of individual attention. Because what we've noticed is in our community, there's not much for the kids to do on the weekend. So we're trying to fill that gap.
Cool.
This summer too, we had a jobs program for young
yeah.
people in our neighborhood.
Great.
We were able to give young people a job 20 hours a week, and we had two supervisors working with them. And it was actually a 2-for-1 deal because we had the young people working, and we also had had them out cutting grass and cleaning up vacant lots in the community. So the community got something out of this too.
Great.
Yeah.
Cool. And what about housing in the area? Are you doing anything with housing?
We are advocating.
what kind of...
I feel like maybe they should onboard some of them. Homeless or low-income families.
God bless.
So what are the main issues with housing in this area? which I imagine is common to a lot of areas in Columbus. Yeah.
One out of three, one out of five houses in our neighborhood are boarded up.
Okay. Are there a lot of homeless in your area, in this area?
We have Friends of the Homeless.
Okay.
But we also have a lot of working poor.
Okay.
They're working 40 hours a week, maybe working two jobs, but because they're making minimum wage, you still can't make it.
Yeah.
So we have folks who are just, you know, they're trying to find a place cheap enough to rent and cover the bills. We have people staying in the vacant property over there. The vacant property causes problems. There's just too much that can happen with those vacant places. So we're working on developing a program where we can acquire a house cheaply, a vacant house cheaply. We can hire some of the local neighbors to work on it, to restore it, and then we can offer it for a reduced rental fee to one of the neighbors. So we start to build up not just jobs, but also housing there.
Yeah, that sounds like another good community building program.
And God bless John Beard and Columbus Compact, because they renovated those places, those doubles right there on Main Street next to our church, and it has made a world of difference for us. So
the Compact was actively involved, and of course priorities changed. A lot of their money dried up.
Yeah.
You know, we were in their building, which was a great building, but let's hope they can survive, because they've done miraculous things over in that area. And you're also right, sending a message to the community. When the wood comes off the windows and it's no longer boarded up, and there's actual people living there, families, people with jobs, it changes the whole nature, does it
not? You finally start to develop a neighborhood where people want to live there. And that's what we're going for, is developing a community where people feel welcome and who want to be in that community.
It sounds like also just letting people know that they're valued, that the community is valued, and, you know, working on some of the property and making sure that it's in a good condition really shows that you value the community that you're in.
Yeah. We have a lot of good building blocks in our neighborhood, a lot of good people. I mean, 99% of our neighbors are good, solid citizens. They're working. They're keeping. You know, they're working on keeping up their properties. They want to live a normal kind of life. So that's what we're working toward, is to make sure that everybody feels connected and knows that they are welcome here.
And historically, you're on a street and in an area that was often used as examples of the worst place in Columbus to be, and there's been clear progress in the reopening of the elementary school there, the houses you talked about across the street, the transit hub, the events you're talking about, barbecues, attempts at farmers market. Is there a chance, if this progress continues in the next decade, it can be a community where we've got, you know, a supermarket there that was brought in, that there would be places where people would walk to, and the rise of restaurants and other things that would make that a very livable, walkable community?
Yes, I think that's certainly the potential. We have some folks in our congregation who are very green experts. And we have talked about developing a green corridor down through there that makes that a focal point of Columbus, because we have a member of our congregation who built the first platinum LEED house in Ohio. And I think that potential is there to retrofit a lot of the old housing stock there with that type of green technology.
Now where did they build it at? Where did he build it at?
I want to say it's north of Broad Street.
Oh, sure. That's a very, very famous house. I've actually toured it, being on the Near East Area Commission, using students in part from Worthington school districts, which I thought was great. A lot of those students don't get down into the Near East Side. They came here and they built a totally energy efficient house that not only doesn't draw energy, but sells energy back to the grid.
This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell-Newton on WCRS 98.3 102.1.
So that is some great talent to draw off of in your congregation.
Yes.
Because there is tremendous housing stock. You know, the sort of the bones, the skeletons of a lot of those buildings, brick, incredibly well built, and if they could be brought back as greenhouses, that heavy burden on a lot of working class people with the rise of utilities, that problem would go away. The community could stabilize even further.
Right. We're working on putting solar panels on our roof and actually selling back electric to the grid. So I'm hoping we can do that. You should come over and see our sanctuary sometime and just see the beautiful, old, intricate woodwork that we have in there. It's a huge place with stained glass windows that I don't think can be replicated anymore. It's something to see.
Yeah, I was in there for a wedding, and I was really astounded at how well preserved. Usually I think it's been for a while.
Yeah.
It's in the inner city. They've ripped everything out. Stunningly, you know, gorgeous church.
Pretty historical.
Yeah, very historical. Yeah. And what is the history of the church? Are there past accomplishments that your congregation is proud of?
Well, the congregation's been around for 162 years. And as you mentioned, we were the first congregation, Lutheran congregation in Columbus, to make the transition from the liturgy in German to English, hence the name First English Lutheran Church. We were there also during World War II to help a lot of folks make that transition to becoming enculturated here in this country. We were the prototype site for the first neighborhood health center in town. So, I mean, the congregation's been out there on the leading edge of a lot of social issues. I think we were one of the first Lutheran churches in Columbus to integrate back then. And now we're doing our best to take the lead on the public safety and housing and job situation.
Now, if you raise this money, it means you got to stay there another 100 years?
That's what I'm counting on.
You heard it here.
We can buy a new roof.
The roof's good for 100 years.
Well, and it sounds like you guys are thinking ahead in terms of energy, too, mm-hmm. with the solar panels.
Yes.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, right now our building is pretty green. We actually got the Green Spot Award from the mayor earlier this year.
So. What do you have going on already that adds to the greenness of your building?
Well, a few months back, we have a lighting expert in our congregation, John Fetters, who has Effective Lighting Solutions, and he's been called in as a consultant to the military around the country. And he's made our building kind of his showplace to bring customers in and let them see modern cutting-edge technology. So a few months back, John put new light bulbs in our sanctuary. And actually really makes a huge difference in the quality of the lighting, but they're so much more energy efficient. As well as it finally answers how many Lutherans does it take to change a light bulb.
How many?
How many theses did Martin Luther post on the door?
96.
Yeah. 96 Lutherans to change a light bulb.
Yeah.
One for each thesis.
Yeah.
The congregation go back to the 1840s. That's when a huge influx of immigrants because of unrest in Germany. Were they originally in German Village? How'd you get on the east side? That seems like it's almost a ways out in the... You've only been there for 100 years. Where were you prior to that? In German Village, other areas?
I really don't know.
No.
I haven't studied the history of the congregation that closely.
Well, my wife's family, the Patzers, part of the Patzers of Grove City, when it was a German enclave. And she hasn't changed the spelling of her name yet. It's still with a Z. So we should hunt these Germans now. Actually, my grandfather was half German as well.
Yep, my family is largely German, the Grimans.
It's Ohio. Okay. Actually, mm-hmm. and really the unrest over World War I, you were helping in World War II, but World War I, right, that's the anti-German hysteria where we had to change things to hot dog from Frankfurter. Mm-hmm. It's sort of... but really, more German blood than anyone in the United States, even more so than English. Now, so you're the first English church, you're in the inner city, you're gay-affirming, you're green. I like that, German Green Party.
Mm-hmm.
we have many friends in the Green Party, including ourselves. And the notion of community involvement. where can you go from here? Do you have any future plans in community building? Seems like a tough task with limited resources.
It takes time, but you have to put in the work to build relationships. I mean, I don't know of a shortcut for that. So we work one-on-one just to develop those relationships that give us the foundation for anything we want to do. We're getting ready to start a program, what we call Party in a Box. We're going to ask neighbors on one neighbor on each block to invite all the rest of the neighbors on that block to come into a backyard party and ask that person to host that party. And then we're going to have the party in the box and provide them with all the resources they need to be able to do that. But that's a way to get our neighbors to meet each other and to start building some sense of connectedness.
Now, here's the key question. Are you getting, and this was always difficult, my wife and I used to go down to Third Avenue, and the joke was we didn't go down there for worship, just for the social activism. Mm-hmm. And the broader question was always difficult to get, you know, well, it was easy to get progressive activists mm-hmm. to go down there. It was more difficult to get people from the actual community or neighborhood to come in. Or have you been able to draw from the community at all?
Well, I've been there
for worship.
I've been there for a little over 5 years now, and I think the first Sunday I preached, there were maybe a dozen people in the worship service, and since that time we now have two worship services. Our first service has anywhere from 100 to 150 people attending, and our second service has about 30 to 50. Our second service is the much more traditional Lutheran style of worship. So I'm not sure how well that fits, but...
And the first one, you're kind of more freelancing, related.
A little more laid back, a little more casual, and you get breakfast with that first service, too, so that makes
so
a big difference.
So why do I suspect you draw from the neighborhood more in the first service and the more traditional kind? But that's really explosive growth. Yeah. I mean, so many of these inner city churches have turned into social agency, no real services, or sold to other congregations, which can be positive as well. Right out here, we can look and see it. An Ethiopian church, mm-hmm. But others have not been able to adapt. What are the themes of your when you're preaching to such diverse communities? What are some of the themes of the sermons you would give? What would you speak about?
Well, Lutherans talk a lot about law and gospel. The law is what opens our eyes and helps us understand that we do need to, we are, you know, there's something missing for us. The gospel part comes in with telling us how we do become free. So you hear a lot about grace when you're at First English. God's grace, unmerited worth. You know, just because you are a child of God, you are somebody. Yeah, and God loves you, and because God loves you, that enables us to love each other. You know, because of God loves us, we can love each other. And that brings us together and gives us a sense of identity and purpose and mission together.
So what's your take on the law, or what's the Lutheran take on the law? Do you mean the law in the sense of, like, the legal system, or is it more of like a God's law type thing?
More in the sense that...
So like the Ten Commandments or something?
And it's nothing necessarily that concrete. It's simply that creation has fallen, creation stands in need of redemption, and God's grace is what redeems us and brings us back to health and wholeness.
And, of course, the other famous quote there, but for the grace of God, you've reached out to people in the neighborhood. What happens? I mean, there's a lot of those people in the neighborhood historically, at least on the street, very destabilized. Do they have references? Have you worked with any of the healthcare providers in the area? I know you're some healthcare advocates for Advocates for Everyone operated out of your church for a while. As well. Is that being built up around there? It seems a lot of those programs have been cut, you know, over the last 10, 20 years.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, and one of the approaches we've been taking is something called asset-based community development. identifying the assets that we have in the neighborhood and then building on that. So that way you're building a positive foundation and not simply looking at the deficits in the neighborhood, because it's hard to build anything on a deficit. So we have the assets there. We tap in a lot to the Central Community House, to Mary Haven, to Build the Bridge Ohio, to the Neighborhood Health Center, trying to help people find a sense of equilibrium and stability so they can start to put their lives back together. One of the guys that came over for breakfast, he came to breakfast and worship for probably 2 years. And one Saturday I saw him, and he came up to me on the back step, and he hugged me and gave me a kiss and started tearing up. And he said, "I want to thank you." And I said, "Thank me for what?" And he said, "You, because of this place, I now have the courage and the ability to go home and reconcile with my family. I can set aside what was holding me back. I can go home. I can reunite with my wife. I can grab my kids again. And I can be the father and the husband that I've been called to be." And that was, I mean, to me, that was just, that made it all worthwhile. So
you're starting it, you're kicking off the campaign. Are there other things that are going to happen in regards to this 100th year celebration?
Well, next summer, we will be opening up our building much more and inviting people to come in and check it out, see the stained glass, see the beautiful woodwork in there. We'll also be doing several music events in there, inviting some local musicians to come in and simply, share the place. That's what it's for, is to have the neighborhood join us with this and be a part of this.
Sounds great. Anything you'd like to tell our listeners? How can they get involved? How can they donate? Do you guys have a website?
Thank you for asking that. We actually do have a website. ColumbusLutherans.org, and we have the PayPal donate button on there. I'm not real technologically savvy on all this stuff, but it is out there. If you can get to the website and do it online, it's there.
It's probably self-explanatory okay. Once people find it.
Yes. Yeah.
And the name again, Columbus Lutherans?
ColumbusLutherans.org. Any questions about that, you can always call the church office, 252-3191.
Okay, and it looks like you're located at 1015 East Main Street.
Yes. We also do a neighborhood dinner every Thursday night, 6 o'clock. We open up the doors. We have about 25 different partners that come in and help us serve a meal. It's free.
Who are some of these partners?
They are not just Lutheran churches, but they're also Methodist churches. We have a Jewish congregation that comes in to help us, a Baptist group. It's a pretty eclectic bunch. So
these are essentially 25 different churches?
Yes.
All throwing this
Thursday night dinner, 6 to 7. We'll have anywhere from 100 to 250 people come in and join us. And it's more than just a meal. It's a gathering time, a community time to get to know our neighbors. That's what it's there for. So we just had Bexley United Methodist come in for what we called an urban immersion weekend. And they spent Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with us. Friday night at the block party, Saturday doing neighborhood projects, and then Sunday morning in worship with us. And we had 85 volunteers come over from there.
Because, there's probably no greater divide in a short area between urban and suburban,
yes,
than that railroad track there. And it looks like we got the wrap-up sign here. Thanks a lot, Pastor Bob Ward. And again, the church is located at
1015 East Main Street, corner of Main and 22nd.
Thank you for being our guest. This has been Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3, 102.1.
Check out the First English Lutheran Church, doing a lot of great things, building community on the east side of Columbus.